Lord, thank you for our opportunity to gather, even as a small group. We just thank you for the time to be able to share and fellowship and be able to teach the word and sing and just praise you through these acts of worship. So we thank you for our time. And as we kind of look at a passage in Revelation, I just pray that Revelation's a hard book and sometimes hard to grasp and understand. And I just pray that we each, as we think about the different views we have, we just have humility within that and understand there's lots of different views and different understandings of it. And so I just pray that we can have some clarity as we look at these different views as we go through a part of Revelation. So in Christ's name we pray. Amen. Okay, so let's have a quick test. It's always good to have tests because when you don't know the answer, you'll never forget that answer again. True. When somebody asks you something and you say the wrong answer, then you really won't forget it. So just spit out answers, even if they're wrong, then you'll remember this forever. Okay, so how many views did we look at last week? I just put up the fingers on how many. If somebody noticed that, I was like, 4 views. Does anybody remember one of them?
Preterist.
Idealist,
historian.
Historicism, and futurist. 4 views. Okay, so we're going to look at the 7 seals this morning in Revelation 6, and we're going to just kind of, and even if we don't get through the whole thing, we'll just end wherever we're going to be. We're just going to look at the 4 views on each one of those. So let's just quickly just refresh our memory on those 4 views. So preterist. Past means past. So everything happened in the past. What was kind of the main event of past that this is tied to? 70 AD, the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, right? What happened? The Roman army coming in, Titus and generals, the siege on Jerusalem for 3.5 years. That is kind of from 66 to 70. That is where they focus the book of Revelation on, okay? I'm still trying to determine. I can't. I'm having a little hard time figuring out whether the preterist understands it as sequence. So like you read the book of Revelation starting in chapter 6, all the seals, the trumpets, the bowls, if they see it all the way through, this is leading from the seals, then to the trumpets, then to the bowls, and then at the end of the bowls is the end of 70 AD. I'm not sure, but kind of what I'm understanding is that they do see it like an idealist would see it, a lot of idealists, that they see the 7 seals beginning to end. So starting 66 AD, ending in 70 AD with the destruction of the temple. Then the trumpets, starting in 66 AD, ending with the 70 AD. Starting, the bowls, starting in 66, ending. So it's kind of like recapitulation, that word. It's a time and time again. It's the same. It's just a different vision or a different way of understanding. You could almost think of it as like the Gospels. What do the Gospels do? They kind of show, sometimes you're like, well, how does that work? They didn't say that in the other one. Well, they mesh together, but it's from a different angle that it was seen or the Synoptic Gospels. So I believe that's how they understand it, but I'm sure there's multiple understandings of that, how they do. So then the historicist view. So you have the preterist way over here in the past, then you have the historicist view. What do we remember about that? Events that happened in the past, but also could happen in the future. So it's basically that timeline of history from the resurrection in the time of Christ to his return. So some of these things may not have happened yet. A lot of them happened in the past already, but they take those historical events and tie the book of Revelation to those historical events. Okay, so the idealist view. Symbolic, allegorical. They're thinking in terms of not so much events, but the struggle between good and evil, basically from the resurrection to the time of Christ. So it doesn't represent a specific event or period. This is just as what's happening from the time of Christ to his return, all these things. So that's how they see the book of Revelation. So then the futurist view. Future. The future. They see it all in the future. So future from when? Right now, yep, yep, right now. So it's something that has not happened yet because of the fact they see it as what has to happen before any of this happens for a futurist, for a dispensational future, rapture. The church has to go up, and then the tribulation starts. And then there's a little disagreement on the futurist view of what Revelation's talking about, because there's that time in the first 3.5 years in the tribulation that is peace. Some say some of this is talking about that. Some say it's not. Most of this isn't talking about till the second 3.5 years, the great tribulation. So, but there's multiple views. So as we look at this, someone may, if you were sitting here and going, well, I'm a preterist or I'm this or I'm that, especially the historicist view, is I may say this is what a view of a historicist, and there's many of them. So somebody may go, well, that isn't what I believe. Well, yeah, there's multiple views within all these, okay? I did say, if you remember, before going to this, I did say there was a fifth view that where I kind of understood the book of Revelation, right? Well, I found this. I don't know who this guy actually, I don't even know if it says a guy. I don't know. But he had this word for this fifth view. And it's eclectic view. I had to look the word up to see if it actually, what it meant. But it means basically taking multiple views and putting that together. And that's basically how I see. And he summed this up with these four statements. So an eclectic approach to reading Revelation attempts to combine the strengths of several of the other approaches. So Revelation seems to address the first century Christians directly. So what view would that be? Them and also mainly the preterist. So they would take that view and say this is talking about the first century in 70 AD. So we should read Revelation the same way that we read every other book of the Bible, by taking its historical context seriously. That's why I kind of struggle. I'm a millennialist, but I struggle a little bit with the idealist view that is tied to that, because I really do believe there's historical events that these things are tied to that are types and patterns of the things to come. Okay? Secondly, he says, Revelation also presents timeless truths for surviving the struggle between good and evil. And that would be the, which view is that? The idealist view, right? So this revelation also presents timeless truths for surviving the struggle between good and evil, because that's true. The visions of Revelations challenge us to forsake our complacency and stay faithful during times of persecution, which that is huge for me, because I look at the book of Revelation and I think this had to be written to us, and it had to be written to the first century, and it had to be written to the people down the road. There is a point to the book of Revelation. I don't think that's why I struggle with it being all future, like this being not written, because in the futurist view, that really, it doesn't mean anything to us, because the church is raptured and we aren't going to be here. So I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that the book is not. Just like the Old Testament, there's a historical context that was happening, and we look on that, and yeah, we aren't in that, but we look back, say the sacrificial system has nothing to do with us, right? Nothing to do with us. But we look back to the sacrificial system and we see how it was fulfilled in Christ. And that's an encouragement for me, even with Scripture, to see how it's tied together from beginning to end. So there's a point to the Old Testament. We should read it. We should know it. We should look at it. Even in the book of Revelation, I think they say 70% of the book of Revelation is actually quoting or an inference, or what was that word, like inferring to something in the Old Testament, in the language, using that kind of language. So we need to understand the Old Testament to really understand Revelation. And that's why we struggle even more than a lot of people do. Old Testament scholars don't struggle with the book of Revelation nearly as much as we do, because they know the Old Testament and they have immediately things that are like, oh, that triggered that. That's what that's talking about. So, all right, lastly, he says, Revelation also clearly has something to say about events still to come. Some events it describes await future fulfillment, such as the return of Christ, the great white throne judgment, and the arrival of the holy city. And I would even add that future Antichrist is a specific person and is going to be in the future. It's not just not that there isn't types and patterns of those. We saw that in Antiochus Epiphanes and Daniel. We see that in 70 AD with the Romans and Nero. We see that, but also then we're going to see Antichrist all through history. And John 2:18 says that. There was Antichrist basically to come, and there's been Antichrist and always will be. So I do believe there's a future coming in that also. Okay. Kind of clear on that? Yeah? What's that?
Eclectic.
Is that how you say it? Eclectic? Okay, thank you. Oh, no. I think I was saying eclectic. I think I was saying. Yeah, no, for me, I was like, that was kind of helpful for as many things as I've listened to. Lots of things have been tied together that I'm like, oh, I think that's where I am. But nothing's ever said like, oh, this is like, here this is from beginning to end. Like, this is what this looks like. So that was helpful for me. Okay, Revelation 6. Now I watched when the Lamb opened one of the seven seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. So if you know Revelation chapter 5, these seals, we see in verse 2, it says, "And I saw a strong angel proclaiming with a loud voice, 'Who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals?'" And John is kind of concerned because, like, who is worthy? Well, the Lamb is worthy. Christ is worthy. And so now we see that these seals are being opened in chapter 6. Lamb opened one of the seven seals, and he heard one of the four living creatures say with a voice like thunder, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a white horse. So we're going to see in these first four seals, we're going to see four horses, four different colors. Okay? So looking at the preterist view. The preterist, so the horse being white in color, the white represents purity. Many scholars suggest that the rider of the horse is Jesus Christ. Others say that the horseman cannot be Christ because the other three are bringing pain and death. Therefore, the horseman has to be the same, so the rider on the white horse is the Antichrist. So obviously you got two extreme views even within preterism. The two arguments on that, some would say, well, it's got to be Jesus Christ because of the fact in Revelation 19, in the same book of the Bible, who's riding a white horse? Very clear, it's Jesus. Okay? Doesn't mean that it has to be. It's apocalyptic literature. Could be using different understanding, but it does white, thinking purity, thinking Christ, makes sense that it's probably Jesus, but some say it's the Antichrist. One 19th century preterist interpreted the first horseman to be symbolic of the Roman Empire. So we're thinking preterist view, right? Everything's before 70 AD, so this would be his thinking. Symbolic of the Roman Empire with Nero as the Antichrist. Very common thinking of this. The Roman Empire and Nero as the Antichrist. So he says, this rider who went forth conquering was Rome's march toward Jerusalem in the year of 67 to suppress the Jewish revolt, the great Jewish revolt. So the Jews are revolting against Rome, right? So they're sitting there saying, this white horse is Nero coming in to suppress this revolt that was happening with the Jews in right before 70 AD. Ties with their thinking of the past, okay? The futurist thinking. According to the futurist, the events described in the first seal are yet to happen. So nothing's happened yet. It's going to happen in the future. The futurist person, most likely a political or another kind of leader whom people will listen to with great interest because they present himself in such a way so that they will believe him. He is going to be the Antichrist himself. So a lot of the futurists believe, not all, but a lot of the futurists believe this is the Antichrist as well. But the past are saying it's Nero in 70 AD, because it's all going to end in 70 AD. The futurist is sitting there saying, no, this is the Antichrist, but this is the Antichrist to come. And this Antichrist is saying, okay, he's going to come and conquer, but he does that in peace at the beginning. There's no bloodshed. And they look at that and they say in verse 2, he says, and I looked and behold a white horse, and its rider had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he came out conquering and to conquer. So he has a bow but no arrows. So they would say, well, he's doing this in peace. He's going to do this. He's going to conquer and he's going to set this whole thing up. But he's going to do it in peace before without an arrow, without a weapon. He's going to have a bow, but he's going to conquer with peace. And that would be then, that thinking of the futurist would be the first 3.5 years of the tribulation where there's peace. That wouldn't be started the great tribulation yet.
Wow, you got a lot out of that.
Yeah. And like I said, not all futurists believe that that's one view that can be. A lot of them do. A lot of them, though, would say certainly is the Antichrist. The preterist, a lot would say certainly is the Antichrist. Okay. Let's see. Idealist view. Almost all commentators took the picture as an image of the preached gospel and its prosperity. Okay. They take it as a picture of the image of the priest's gospel and its prosperity. So when you kind of look at Matthew 24, what happens is the gospel's going out to all nations. Doesn't mean everybody's going to be saved. That's not what they're saying, but it's going to go out and it's going to conquer and it's going to do what it says it's going to do. And then people are going to be saved. Okay? It's going to happen. So it suggests that the Lord is riding forward triumphantly, conquering and to win. Some would argue they struggle with the point that, okay, so if Jesus is the one going forward, Jesus, this is the gospel, because some say Jesus is riding the white horse. Well, how can he be opening the seals and riding the white horse at the same time? That's a major argument for a lot of people. But it doesn't... This is apocalyptic literature. It doesn't have to be so literal that he can't do that, because in one passage, what is that? There's one point where it says, in the verse before, it says Jesus is holding the 7 stars in his right hand. And then in the next verse, he says he lays his right hand on John. So, I mean, this apocalyptic literature, we don't have to take it in a way where he can't do both and it's God. I don't, probably could do, can do both. So even if that was the case, but. So, futurist view thinking that is, or not, the idealist view thinking that is Jesus and the gospel going out to conquer. And another argument would say, well, these are all four white, all these are four horses. This horseman is doing this. They all need to be tied to persecution, death, famine, all these things that are going to be poured out on the people. So how can the first horse be Jesus conquering? And then all of a sudden we switch to death, famine, persecution, all these things. Okay, the historicist view. He has a bow in his hand, was given a crown, and rode victoriously on his mission. The bow shows the capacity to overcome an adversity. The crown is a picture of triumph. And we see in chapter 19, another rider on the white horse is plainly recognized as Jesus. So they see this as Jesus and the word going out. Similar to the idealist view, correct. They had one writer had a comment. He says, bows and arrows were used not only for, so they wouldn't distinguish between him not having an arrow. They would say he has a bow, he has arrows. He says, bows and arrows were not used only for killing people from a distance, but to deliver an urgent message. clarity whether they were a message was shot in, or I don't know exactly how that looks, but that's how they see that, is this message going forward. So that's the historicist view. Okay, so you see, you range from the Antichrist to Christ. Major different views. But we saw that, if you remember, in Daniel 9 with the 70 weeks. If you remember at the end, some, the idealist view, saw this as Jesus, and the other futurist view saw that as the Antichrist. The same thing in that great tribulation. So it kind of ties together, because that's where we are in the book of Revelation. They're thinking this is the great tribulation. So you've got one is Christ and one is the Antichrist. Okay, so the second seal. It says, when he opened, in verse 3, when he opened the second seal, I heard a second living creature say, come. And out came another horse, bright red. Its rider was permitted to take peace from the earth so that people should slay one another. And he was given a great sword. So the preterist view, thinking past 70 AD, they say this earth, where it says earth, would actually be talking about Judea at that time. So they wouldn't say this is everywhere on the earth, because if you look at that verse again, it says, second creature come and came another horse, bright red, his rider was permitted to take peace from the earth. They would see that, because we're talking about only Jerusalem in 70 AD, that destruction of the temple. They're saying this is just talking about that localized area. Okay, so you have to take earth as that point. Not that it couldn't, but... according to the preterist viewpoint, the second horseman represents the loss of peace from the land of Israel. Other than the war, which was fought between the Romans and the Jews, there was civil wars as well among the Jewish nations. And if you remember, talking in past about, in Daniel, we talked about kind of the civil war that was happening with multiple groups. It wasn't just when Rome came in. It basically was pretty much destroyed already because of the civil war that was happening with the Jews. And that's where they would tie this together it's the end of verse 4, so that people should slay one another, and he was given a great white sword. So that those people slaying one another, they would take that as the civil war that was happening in Jerusalem. That's what most would say. It's symbolic for blood. It's symbolic for death, yeah. Okay, so the rider of the horse, fiery red, this is still in this preterist view, right? Yep. No. What are we in right now? I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. Is symbol of civil war and strife. During the first century AD, there was a relative peace in the Roman Empire, which Pax Romana, right, peace of Rome. However, this was come to an end in the land of Israel at this point when the Jewish revolt broke out in 66. The sword is the seal, in this seal suggests a hand-to-hand fight and the expression. That one man would slay one another suggests civil war. According to history, there was a civil war between Jews even as they were fighting the Romans. And if you ever want to read about that, Josephus writes a lot about that civil war that happened. He writes a ton about the famine that happens very graphically during that time. So, talking about civil war, that's what that seal is opening. That's what's going to happen, and that would be at 70 AD or 66 when it started. Futurism. According to the futurist view, the blazing red shade of this horse recommends slaughter and discusses a period of war that happens upon the earth as the tribulation advances. Is that during the Great Tribulation? That would most likely, some could say it was a little different, but doesn't quite make sense to not be the Great Tribulation, because there seems to be peace in those 3.5 years. And so I would say that the most would say it's the Great Tribulation. I'm not sure how you'd explain it otherwise.
Yeah.
Walvoord says, if the first seal is a period of peace, so that would be the first horse, and some have held, though this seems to be contradicted by the fact that the rider of the first horse conquers, so he would say, it doesn't, how can that be peace if he's conquering, but he's conquering with the gospel, okay. He goes, in any case, when the second seal is broken, military warfare breaks out and peace is taken from the world. The constant tension among the nations and the ambitions of men have their climax in this period before Christ comes. So he would say, this Walvoord, which is has a lot of authority with among futurists, he would say that probably the white horse possibly is peace in Christ. And then secondly, it's the second seal opens and there's bloodshed, and it would be the Great Tribulation. So, yes, here's a quote. It says, generally speaking, most of those who believe in the futurists say that the second seal is nothing else but the beginning of the Great Tribulation, which is going to take place at the end times. The idealism view. The idealism, the fiery red horse represents war in general or civil war in particular. As the story of humanity is the story of war and conflict, the judgment of God can be seen everywhere out through the life of man. So remember, the idealist view is from this whole time frame. And they're sitting there saying, so let me read that again. Think about this is in between this whole thing. As the story of humanity is the story of war and conflict, the judgment of God can be seen everywhere throughout the life of a man. And that's what happens. We know and look in our own history. In the last 100 years, we've had World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, we've been at war most of the time. We have intermittent times of peace, but it's war. And that's everywhere throughout the world. And so the idealist would say, yeah, this is just a picture of what life is. And the time from the time of Christ till the time he returns, this is what we're going to live in. The historicist view says that the second horse, and if you remember the historicist view, we're talking about they'll tie it to specific times in history. This one commentator would say the second horse might cover a 240-year period from 64 AD to 304 BC. During this time span, it's indicated that there are 10 major persecutions. These persecutions in chronological order are, and I'm not going to read them off because I can't pronounce half the names and probably won't know them, but like the first one, starting with Nero, which would be in the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, and then Domitian, and then eight other names that I'm not aware of. So they would tie that to that time frame. They would just say this red horse is coming out. There's going to be death, persecution, and he ties it to these from 64 to 304. And this is the historicist view, because they're sitting there saying, because the preterist view would end basically in 70 AD. Okay. The historicist view then, so this is going to, this view is saying, or this guy is saying, this time frame is going to go to 304. That's this seal. 64 to 304. Multiple views, because there's lots of times of persecution, and you could take it, you could have taken that seal all the way from then till now. But he would say there's 10 major ones, that there was a ton of persecution. And you would have to say they're in the time of Nero, no question. There's a difference between the time of Nero than the time of now, or different things. I mean, it was ugly. So, and these other 10, he must categorize at that same kind of level. So that's why he would end it in 304. So that's the historicist view. Here's another comment. The history of Christianity has been changed from peace to war. So from the first seal to the second, the red color of this horse brings into the scene blood, and the fact that the great sword appears as well shows that the reason of the blood or bloodshed, it's going to be war. So most agree, obviously, that the color red of the horse, we're talking about bloodshed, he's opening the seal and there's going to be war. The third seal. When he opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and behold, a black horse, and its rider had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard what seemed to be a voice in the midst of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a denarius, and 3 quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and wine." So that you start to see right away that this is probably talking about famine that's coming forward. So the scales, the preterist view, the scales in the hand suggest men must eat their daily food by great carefulness. So weighing this out, man, this be careful with the food because there just isn't much. This horse represents famine or lack of food. In the book of Lamentations, there is a text which says, "Our skin was black like an oven because of the terrible famine." Whether that's tied to the black horse or not, I don't know. Also, it says, "The Jews in Jerusalem suffered very often because of lack of food during the Roman oppression." And like I said, if you read anything on Josephus, there's a lot talked about famine that happened because most Jews starved to death during, especially for the preterist view, during this thinking, during this time of the destruction of Jerusalem. And they were walled in the siege for 3.5 years, and there was no food going in and out, and you went out, you were basically crucified. That bloodshed was bad. They said they were crucifying 500 people a day as people were leaving Jerusalem. And if there's talk out there that most Christians then observed what was talked about in Matthew 24 and left to Pella and fleed. It said, don't take your bag, leave everything and go, from Matthew 24. And most Christians did that. So Christians weren't stuck in Jerusalem and were part of this. Most were Jews. Well, not that they weren't Jews, they were Jewish Christians. But yeah, the famine was ugly. So because of the hard situation, food became scarce. Josephus records all these things. And they would say, the preterist would say also from Matthew 24, it says the preterist also understand this time was the time period that's connected to Jesus' words when he said, "But woe to those who are nursing babies in those days, because it's going to be an ugly time." Talking about the vision, talking about the oil, because that's what's different about that. If you look at that, it's talking about famine, then it says, "But do not harm the oil and the wine," in the end of verse 6. So the preterist, the vision mentions the oil and the wine. They say it fits very well with this picture. Because the expression "do not harm" is translated, or should be translated, is to be no shortage. So we don't have shortage. So he says this implies that there would be no shortage of oil and wine. Josephus speaks of a person called John Giscola. I don't know if you remember me talking about him from Daniel, but John Giscola, and he was one of one of the leaders that revolted against the Romans, and had a lot of influence within the city of Jerusalem, and basically was a major cause of destroying a lot of Jerusalem before the Romans even got there. But John Giscola, the leader of one of the factions warring inside Jerusalem, he says about him that he emptied the goblets of the sacred wine and oil which the priests kept to be poured on the burnt offerings, and which laid in the inner courts of the temple, and distributed it among the people. Moreover, during the siege of Jerusalem, Titus ordered the olive groves and vineyards not to be ravaged. So that would be their understanding of this oil and wine being in abundance. No food, but luxury things. The futurist view, most futurists understand this horseman to represent those starvation conditions which will start because of the fighting and war in the previous seal. Which a lot of times, because of war, especially, Yeah, especially in the times of 70 AD when you got sieges happening. But in the future also, they're saying because of war, there's a shortage of food. That's what happens, and there's going to be starvation because of that. So the futurists would look ahead and say, yeah, that seal that breaks out war, then there's going to be starvation as a result because of that. They say the oil and wine. I'm going to read from MacArthur on the oil and wine. This one made the most sense to me. He says, although the point could be that these foods will not be affected by the famine, a more straightforward meaning is that the bare staples, oil, was used in the preparation of bread and wine was considered necessary for cooking and purifying water, suddenly would become luxuries that have to be carefully protected. So he's saying you have those things. They used to be luxuries, but now you really have to protect these things because they're necessities for us to use. That's the futurist view, which all these believe. Obviously, it's starvation and famine and these things happening. So this main seal is that mainly the view is the same, but when is that taking place? The preterist view, it's happening during the siege on Jerusalem. The futurist is saying it's happening in the past. The idealist is sitting there saying, there's famine always been and always will be. From the time of Christ till the end, there's famine and it's going to happen. And we see times where there is luxuries, and we see that all over the world, where there's luxuries of oil and wine or those kinds of things, but we see famine, we see starvation. We see most of the world lives on, I think somebody said, $1 a day. So there is starvation, there's famine out there, but there's luxuries, there's oil and wine. So that's happening. So the idealist is saying that's just happening throughout the ages. The historicist. One refers to the great famine which occurred in the 3rd and 4th century. So what are they doing? The historicist is tying it to an event. There was a great famine, I guess, in the 3rd and 4th century. That's where they tie it to. They must be getting down this view would be getting down the road a little bit, so you can't go back to 70 AD. It seems like you should if you're a historicist, because I would go back to 70 AD and say, man, that's the time of famine. That was ugly. But they're sitting there saying, well, that other seal was from of death, and all that was from 64 to 304. So now we got to keep going along the time frame. Now we're going to say, well, that famine must be from in the 3rd and 4th century. Does that make sense? How it's going along. So they really can't go back. Especially because that time of famine, Josephus writes about a time where so many families, all these people were dying in their households, and people were trying to bury them, and they couldn't. They were dying as they were burying them because of the famine that was happening. So at some point, they started, John Giscola started to, because of the smell of death that was just throughout and not being able to bury them, they were throwing them over the walls in Jerusalem and landing in the ditches below. Outside of Jerusalem, because there was so much death that was happening and they couldn't handle the smell that was happening and the starvation. Josephus writes of times where mothers ate their babies. And so that's how, when you see in Matthew, when it talks about, some will argue, say, well, it says these events, something like, this will be the worst of any time in the time to come. I can't quote it exactly. And some will say, well, obviously that can't be talking about 70 AD, only 70 AD in Matthew 24, because we have the Holocaust. We have where way more people died. But the way this looked and the events of how this happened in Jerusalem, the temple where the presence of God was supposed to be, and now these things happen, and that can't be, you know. Okay, we'll just do one more seal. We're not going to go through them all. So hopefully this has given you a picture of what's happened. So we'll just look at the fourth one and then we'll be done. The fourth seal. And I heard a voice, when he opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature saying, come. And I looked and behold, a pale horse, and its rider's name was Death. and Hades followed him. And they were given authority over the fourth of the earth to kill with sword and with famine and with pestilence and with wild beasts of the earth. So we see a lot of these things even tied together now, but come to be more extreme. So the preterist, they would tie this, and they see the in this seal, the events occurred right after the Jewish revolt against the Roman Empire. According to this view, the four horses represent this time period in the first century when this great war took place. And all the events are a result of conflict. Earlier, the famine, and now death strikes these people who were involved in this war. So it's just talking about that time frame, this whole time frame within 66 to 70. That's the preterist thinking.
The
historicist view. The historicist view is taking not to the Old Testament, but nobody really ties. Right. That would be more of an idealist view, somebody that takes things more symbolic and allegorizes things and would look and say, see what this, and I would fall into that category a little more because I see it as a type and pattern. So things in the Old Testament like Antiochus Epiphanes or those things, or the things at the end in the last seal where it talks about the skies being rolled up, the stars falling. Well, where do we see that kind of language in the Old Testament? We see that in Isaiah 13 and 34, talking about destruction of Babylon, where they've taken Babylon out, and it's like, use that language. Well, those things didn't happen. The stars didn't fall. The skies didn't roll up. The moon didn't turn black. But it's of these events that like happened. It's like, oh my goodness, it's like the world was just turned upside down. Babylon was conquered. No different than this last seal we see here in the sixth seal. The earthquake that happened, let's just talk about that for just one second. When you opened the sixth seal, I looked and behold, it was a great earthquake. The sun became black as sackcloth. The full moon became like blood and the stars of the sky fell to the earth and the fig tree shed winter. So all these things are happening. Like the idealist view would say, this is the end of the world. This is God coming back. This is in judgment. So it would say those seven seals, that's the vision, the whole vision to the end. Then you're going to look at the trumpet and you're going to see these same things. And if you take note in these seals to trumpets to bowls, you see a major earthquake that happens at the end. Seems to be the ending of this vision culminating in this. Everything's turned upside down. Judgment's going to happen. That makes sense, or?
Yeah. What? The passage we're teaching today.
Okay.
And God had given him three options, gave David three options to choose from, and they were the sword, famine, or pestilence. Mm. Well, not pestilence. Pestilence was what ended up happening.
Right. And same exact three. And the idealist would say, see, that's what's happening over all time. This is what's going on. Okay, we're going to end there. So hopefully did that was that helpful to see, just kind of take the four views and look and go, that's kind of how it, you know, how they, okay. Okay. So next week we'll end, and we're going to end on Revelation 20. Talk about the millennium, and then I think we're going to go into the minor prophets. So we'll get to be in the Old Testament.
Cool. Will that be in October then?
Yes. October. Yep, because Dan's going to do some stuff on Nine Marks, or I believe, yep, for a month. Which Dan is, yep. So he's going to do, what's it called?
Nine Marks of a Healthy Church.
Of a Healthy Church. So, yeah, so he's going to go through that. So that'll be good, and then it'll give me a time to.
We'll have a prayer meeting first Sunday.
Okay.
And then 3 weeks of that. Yeah.
Three weeks of that.
Yeah. Three per week?
Yeah.
All right.